an addict. My name is Greg. The NA member chosen to speak at a meeting needs to be someone who is working and living the NA program of recovery, which are the 12 steps and the 12 traditions. In areas where there is not an abundance of NA members with substantial clean time or experience with the 12 steps and traditions, there is a possibility that a group inexperienced in Narcotics Anonymous may misunderstand NA traditions and invite speakers from outside the NA fellowship. There are several ways to avoid this situation. Our basic text, for instance, reminds us that NA members from other areas are willing to drive long distances to support new groups. The speaker helps fulfill the group's primary purpose, carrying the message of recovery to the addict who still suffers. When speaking at an NA meeting, we should be careful to deliver a clear message of recovery by identifying ourselves as addicts recovering from the disease of addiction. It is not necessary to dwell excessively on our active addiction or war stories because we all know what it was like to use. We came to Narcotics Anonymous to stop using, and we are here to share our experience, strength, and hope of recovery. I was hoping that's all I had to do, and then I could roll out. Like I said, I'm an addict. My name is Greg. And I'm overwhelmed. Committee asked me to do this a little while ago. I wasn't prepared in terms of the topic, but what y'all have taught me, I'm prepared in terms of being an addict. And the good addict that I am, the first thing I did is I called my sponsor. You know. But I told him I prayed, and I just asked God to guide me so clearly that even somebody as stupid as me could get through this workshop. And I asked him to motivate me from the top of my head to the bottom of my feet so that I could do this with patience and persistence. And those of y'all that know that prayer know what I'm talking about. Me and Wanda were sitting there talking. We thought this was going to be a small workshop. But God has a way of just letting us know who's really in charge. And since I'm kind of ad-libbing so that I can actually get to what I want to share about, I'd like to just do one thing. Contrary to popular belief, these will not keep you clean. So if you got some business and that call that you need to get, go ahead and step outside and let us go back to the days of yesteryear when we didn't even have these. I didn't say that, did I? I'd also like to remind us that if you think you're here because you got the blues with the gal, you got the blues with the man, the job ain't treating you right, the car ain't right, the bill's too high, man, bump all of that. Our primary purpose is for that person tonight that's going to strike red for the first time. It's for that person, she's holding her hair back because she don't want to get it singed, has no idea that they're on the way. We need to be here with some kind of message when they get here. And the only message that all of us have is when that happened to me, this is what I did about it. These are the results I'm getting. You know, I'm glad we don't have to get into the war stories because my story is real simple. I'm not a guy to use because the big boys beat my ass. I'm not a guy to use because the woman wouldn't give me none. I'm not a guy to use because the boss pissed me off. I used because I was gullible, I was an idiot, and I was an addict. I was 11, 12 years old, minding my business. I was outside playing. Some of y'all remember when you used to go outside and play. The only requirement for playing was to have a good time and bring your ass in when somebody called you. I didn't need Game Boy, Nintendo, Xbox, none of that. Give me some dirt and a stick and some ponytails to pull, and I was okay. Somebody came along and gave me a suggestion. They said, Greg, why don't you try this? It'll make you feel better. Do you know what that one suggestion? I participated in a whole lot of things that weren't true. First of all, I didn't know that I was already feeling better. And I allowed this person to convince me that I could do something about it. I'm here to report, when I got it in me, I didn't get high. I didn't get courage. You know, I didn't get self-esteem. I got sick as shit. And I was like, And y'all were having such a good time for me, because y'all were saying stuff like, it's hidden now. Don't let it go. I didn't have the courage to tell you I didn't like it. All I felt was different. I chased different for 35 years. That was my cellmate, different. And the most insidious thing about feeling different is it doesn't matter how you feel, you want to feel different. Feel good, want to feel different. Feel bad, want to feel different. Don't feel nothing, you want to feel different. I tried to put myself as close to death as I possibly could in the name of trying to feel different. Y'all know what I'm talking about. Trying to feel different. So as I was thinking about this topic, cellmate or soulmate, you know, I can't share on something I don't have experience with. So for those of y'all folk that are married, you know, and you're happy and you that's wonderful, because that's what you're supposed to do. We become productive members of society. But for those folk that think they're in love, they really just in heat. Just ask yourself this question. If you think you truly found your soulmate, ask yourself, are you willing to give up your clean time to continue being miserable with them? That's what I know about being a soulmate. A cellmate, what I've come to find out, Riley, is works, gadgets, telephones. Some of y'all know what I'm talking about. I'm talking about when you're in solitary confinement. You know, when somebody said, Jane, wait right here, I'll be right back. No more bars, no key. Wait right here, I'll be right back. I was locked down because I was caught up. Locked down because I was caught up. The freedom that we get in this program to just participate and become productive members of society allows us to make those better choices so that it is possible for us to develop relationships in here and have soulmates. Please, you know, the advice we give newcomers in here, man, sometimes we need to look in the mirror and give it to ourselves. I remember hearing people say, don't get in a relationship in the first year. And me being an inquisitive kind of addict, I was wondering, well, do people that's married, they have to put their wives out and, you know, just, I'm telling you what I was thinking. Because I didn't know. Because I told you what my cellmate was. Because when I was out there, in the end, and I'm not talking about them last 30, 60, 90 days. I'm talking about them last 5, 10, 15 years. Because I don't know what y'all's in, but I had a decision to make. Get with the soulmate or get with the Billy. That's my cellmate. Soulmate, cellmate. Because if I got with the soulmate, that means I had to go half with the cellmate. I wasn't having it. And when I got here, and y'all said don't get in a relationship in the first year, I had to kind of think back, and I was going, 10 years had passed. And I'm sharing that because it wasn't 10 years because I didn't have an opportunity. It was 10 years because there was something I wanted to do that was more important than anything else. And when you have something in your life that's more important than anything else you want to do, All that stuff that you think matters really doesn't matter. And what I found today is, having been released from that obsession, I'm able to make some decisions in here, and I'm able to embrace what I like to call the principle of the second step, is God has given us an opportunity to do most of this shit in our lives again for the first time. I'm a guy that had houses. I was never a homeowner. See, homeowners pay their mortgage. They get insurance. They take care of the property. People that have houses, they go to foreclosure and their asses get put out. There's a big difference. And the reason I had that house, because I had what I thought was a soulmate. And one day she just kindly told me, after I had to make the decision, do I pay the mortgage or do I cop? Y'all know which one went out every time. And you try to hide the notices that come from the bank. And one day she just kindly said, I can't live with you and help you. This is a person not in recovery. She said, I can't live with you and help you. So you know it. I said, well, roll out. And that's what she did. She rolled out. And she let me live in that house until all her legal ducks were in a row. And then I had to roll out. Today, her and I are still the best of friends. She still has that house. So I didn't lose the house. It's still right there where it was. But sometimes you can have a soulmate in this process of recovery. They don't have to be a recovering person, but they sure can help you in the program that you think you have. You know, that cellmate is any person, place, or thing that will keep your ass locked down, caught up, and stuck. So we all have our individual cellmates. You know, because when I first heard this topic, I thought I was going to have to come in here and tell a jail story. See, my history is not being in jail. I need to share with y'all, my history was putting people in jail. I came in here and I was ashamed of my story, because everybody in here had a jail story. You know, the worst thing to do is be in Narcotics Anonymous, have gone through everything that everybody else went through, and don't think you belong here because of your story. And what my story was, when I came from Vietnam, I brought home a whole lot more than just some of the mental scars. And I brought this disease here with me. And it was during a time, April 1968, some of y'all might remember that. And I looked around, and it looked like the place I had just left. Folk running around, shooting people, fires burning, you know. I'm right at home. And what happened was, I was able to ship some personal belongings home. 250 pounds of personal belongings. No mementos, no clothes, no pictures, no electronic stuff, just personal belongings. Y'all didn't have what I had. And so what happened was, when those personal belongings ran out, I was faced with the impossible task of having to go to work. Well, let's see. I didn't mind shooting people. I was pretty much off the hook. I was strung out as far as I could get. And I was living in the illusion of having some power. So I took the perfect job. I became a Washington, D.C. police officer. I was walking the streets of the nation's capital with a badge and a gun, full-blown addict, out of my mind. And I didn't want to share that with you guys, because part of your story can be your cellmate. If it keeps you locked down from sharing it, and as my sponsor liked to say, exposing yourself, because I had to stop and think for a minute. All these people in here just like me. I'm holding myself hostage because of my story. And I want to get to tell my story. See, I don't want 6 months from now y'all be saying, you know the guy that was in Ocean City trying to share some good NA shit? Let me tell you about his story. I want to tell my story. So once I got the freedom from my story locking me down, I was able to share that with you guys. Recovery is a process that you can't grandfather in. Everybody in this room came in here with one day clean. And nobody in here has been clean tomorrow yet. So there's a part of me that doesn't mind that recovery is now not only part of my cellmate, it's part of my soulmate. Recovery keeps me locked right in situations just like this. We all have a story of not going to meetings. Listen, I'm just going to share this. If you go into another meeting somewhere, you get back to your home group, and you know, and you're going to stick your hand up and say, you know, I've been around here for so many years, and I don't go to meetings anymore. Shut your ass up. Please. See, because I told you I came in here gullible, and I am gullible enough to believe that I have gone to enough meetings to hear people say, and a girl, you know, and that damn, that man, and I stopped going to meetings, and I went back out. Oh, I heard that. I don't remember half the stuff that they shared, but I heard that, and I went back out. So still, let me be stupid enough to believe that if I keep going to meetings, I might not go back out. Just that simple. I keep going to meetings, I might not go back out. Now, I'm not saying don't share that, but share it with your sponsor. See what they tell you to do. Cellmate or soulmate. I had an experience where I was with somebody who's not in recovery. No, let me change that. They're not recovering like I'm recovering. Everybody's got some kind of program. I don't know who, in my arrogance, I would think that God doesn't touch everybody, whether they're in the rooms or not. So I don't know, but you know how we do. We want to beat them over the head with that 12-step hammer. You know, we want that reward for, but I'm clean now. You know, and these were people, like I was sharing with a friend of mine this morning, that we held hostage all those years. We finally gave them a parole, but damn, we put some conditions on it. Can you imagine that? Hold somebody hostage, then kind of let them go with some conditions. I heard a brother say one time, you know, we're talking about unconditional love. He said, if it's love, it already is unconditional. So the freedom that I've been given in here to participate even in something like this, where we're talking about cellmate or soulmate, it is a beautiful experience to actually be able to share your entire life with someone else, no strings attached, and not be living in fear of your story or being held hostage by it. You know, the amazing thing, there are people here who made new relationships since they've been down here. There are people who are actually going to go back home with the same people they came down here with. And there are going to be some people that after this topic, they're going to look at that person like they thought one way, and realize it's the other way. I'm going to let y'all be the judge of that. Because like I said, I don't have no experience with that right now. You know, I have a certain amount of freedom. But you know, like anything else in Narcotics Anonymous, my turn is coming. But I feel better that I'm going to be able to embrace my turn. Because I tend to gravitate to the people, not those people that's going to say, man, you need to. I gravitate to the people that say, when that happened to me, this is what I did. These are the results I got. Now, if those results sound pretty solid, and that's an individual that I've been watching, I might try it, but I'm also going to ask them for some guidance along the way. Because I'm subject to take their information, put my twist on it, and get some entirely different results, and then come back and blame them. You know, the reason I said this is because there was a guy. He used to go to this bar. He went to this bar every Friday at the same time. And they would all sit along in a line. Guy would hang his head down. And his buddy would say, "Man, what's wrong?" He said, "Man, that damn wife of mine, she just..." He said, "Well, what you need to do is put your foot down. You need to put her in her place." So the guy said, "Well, how do I do that?" He said, "Well, next time she gives you some grief, you go home and cuss her out." The guy went home. He cussed her out. Next week, came back to the bar, and he still had his head down. His buddy said, "What happened?" He said, "Well, I did what you told me. I cussed her out." He said, "What happened?" "She put me out." He said, "Well, you can't have that. You're the man of the house. You need to go home and beat her ass." He went home, and he beat her ass. The very next Friday at the bar, they didn't see this guy. Matter of fact, they didn't see him for about 6 months. And when he came in, and the guy said, "Well, what happened?" He said, "Man, I did what you told me, and she had me locked up." He said, "Let me ask you a question. What did you do when your wife did that?" The guy said, "I ain't married." I'm sharing that because when we do stuff like this, when we stand here, when we share the meeting, we need to understand that there's somebody that's listening to us as if it came from the Word of God. That's unfortunate. Trust me, that's not what I'm trying to do up here because, you know, I realize you can't learn what you already know. So my ability to learn is in direct proportion to my ability to be able to say, "I don't know, can you show me?" But when we take this responsibility, there's a person in here right now that ain't sure. They don't have a clue. They don't want to hear about no cellmate, soulmate. All they want to know is, "How do I not shoot dope in the parking lot when I leave this workshop? Can you help me with that?" So I want to always maintain that that's our primary purpose. But by us maintaining our primary purpose, we develop a story and a message to carry for the addict that still suffers. And suffer to me don't mean because you ain't paying your bills and they get ready to put your ass out. You might be in some pain. And if you do absolutely nothing about pain, it will eventually go away. But suffering is when you can't see a way out. I don't care how much people tell you, "It's going to be all right." You suffering, you can't see that. So carry the message to the addict that still suffers. Because suffering is their current cellmate. Narcotics Anonymous will eventually be their soulmate. We got to help them make the transition. And we have to stay in the transition. You know, this program, man, listen. I done pretty much spent out about trying to stay on cellmate and soulmate. I'm sure Wanda's going to come up here, man, do a bang-up job. And I'm going to try to, you know, just ad-lib a little bit more. So, because trust me, when they slide that 5 minutes more thing, they won't even have to worry about the brother because I'm pretty much done. But I will tell you this. Go to meetings. Pray, interact with your sponsor, and be a maximum service. There's probably somebody here right now says, "I ain't going to no more meetings. As soon as I roll out of here," you know, I'm talking about those people that do the events. Hey, go to meetings because When I used, I made a meeting every day. As a matter of fact, I had to interact with another using addict just to use. I couldn't use by myself. Well, I think I can stay clean by myself. So we're pretty straight about going to meetings. Pray. Notice I didn't say beg. I'm talking about pray. Wonderful. I didn't have a relationship with God when I got here. Because I was waiting for God and I was listening for a voice. I was listening for that voice that was going to be resounding. That would say, Greg, you know you just did something wrong. Maybe you might want to do right. I didn't hear that voice, so I didn't develop a relationship with God. What I remember hearing was, you stupid, you did that shit again. Boy, you just a dumb motherfucker. I didn't realize that that was God speaking to me in the only voice he knew I would understand or pay attention to. So this process has allowed me to embrace God, stop pimping him. You know what I'm talking about. Yeah, God's good all the time. Yeah, well, what about when your ass was on fire last week? You wasn't saying that then. You need to know that God is good whether you're going through something or not. And so I learned to embrace that God in here. Get a sponsor. Man, when I got here, y'all do the math. I had used for 35 years. I was 46 when I got here. Y'all wasn't going to tell me where to go, when to go, who to go with, how long before I could go with them. I knew some things. But I need to remember that when I was looking stupid on the strip, I thought I was looking thorough, but I was looking stupid. But when I saw the people that was like this, I walked up to a perfect stranger and said, can you show me how to do that? I know about sponsorship. Please get in service. Please get in service. All this stuff didn't just happen by magic. Some dedicated people spent a whole lot of time before we got here, and they'll be here a whole lot of time after we leave just so we could come and talk about how shit wasn't right. My name is Greg. I'm an addict. That's my story. I'm sticking to it.
I'd like to thank Greg for sharing his experience, strength, and hope. And now we're going to give you our second speaker, and that is Wanda B.
Family, I'm Wanda Manatic. Speaker statement. The NA member chosen to speak at an NA meeting needs to be someone who is working and living the NA program of recovery, which are the 12 steps and 12 traditions. In areas where there is not an abundance of NA members with substantial clean time or experience the 12 steps and 12 traditions, there is the possibility that a group inexperienced in Narcotics Anonymous may misunderstand NA traditions and invite speakers from outside the NA fellowship. There are several ways to avoid this situation. Our basic text, for instance, reminds us that NA members from other areas are willing to drive long distance to support new groups. The speaker helps fulfill the group's primary purpose, carrying the message of recovery to the addict who still suffers. When speaking at NA meetings, we should be careful to deliver a clear message of recovery by identifying ourselves as addicts recovering from the disease of addiction. It is not necessary to dwell excessively on active addiction or war stories because we all know what it was like to use. We came to Narcotics Anonymous to stop using, and we are here to share our experience, strength, and hope of recovery. Again, family, good morning. I'm Wanda Manatic. Before we get started, I just want to say thank you to CPR, CNA, for hosting such a wonderful, wonderful convention. And for those that appreciate this convention like I do, can we get them a round of applause right now? I want to say, like, this is my first time in Ocean City, and this is, like, really, really powerful. And, I mean, I am a joker who is addicted to going to conventions, and yet I've never been here. It reminds me of a mini world convention. It's that nice, it's that big, and it's that powerful. And the experiences that I've encountered thus far have been a blessing. So for that, I'm real grateful this morning. Now, the topic. What's the topic? Cellmate or soulmate? I want to thank the gentleman that shared before me, because he kept it real simple. And I'm glad y'all stayed for the drama, because here I come. You know, a lot of times I'm an addict who came in here knowing a whole lot of stuff. Like you said, I came in here thinking I knew a lot of stuff, and I did have some information when I got here. But what happened is I got a sponsor. And my sponsor shared with me real early on, baby, there's some tools that you're going to need, and a dictionary is definitely one of them. Because for a long time, I thought I can define stuff, spell stuff, and thought I was pretty articulate. And at some point, it felt like Webster changed the dictionary. You know, everything I thought I knew, the literature tells me is subject for revision. And I understand that clearly today. I want to say welcome to anybody that's new. They asked me not to dwell on excessive usage, so I won't. But I will tell you this so that you can identify and understand why we're here. Because this is not just about getting right into our story and keeping it moving. Because somebody sitting out there don't know what this is even all about. Well, let me just share with you real quick that I'm an addict who started out with a can of beer at the age of 16. Yeah, let's not get it twisted. Alcohol is a drug. That includes beer. So let's put a cut on that. So, now, as a result of picking up that one can of beer, it took me quite a few years in the process, because there's a process when you're using too. It started out with that one can of Coke 45. I should have known by the end of that night that I had my ass kicked. I ended up fighting my favorite cousin, and before you know it, we was in a bad position. Like, I really was hurting him. And it was all about a can of beer. Like, already I should have known that I was going to have a problem with this little thing right here. But I didn't. I didn't get it. And it progressed. And as a result of progression, I went from one substance to another. And I don't need to be identified, but I will tell you some of the symptoms. As a result of that night, I went from one drug to another, and the other drug led me to a place of smoking some stuff, blowing out some stuff, peeking around out of windows, right? Being in a room, right? Being in a room thinking like I dropped something, right? And no goddamn well, like I ain't even smoking that room. Right? Didn't even use in that room, right? Just trying to give you a little understanding, like, about, like, how we get here, right? Because, it's not about just jumping into the literature and jumping into our stories, because there's somebody who really need to identify with the using piece. And so, like, I'm a person also who would steal your shit, help you look for your shit, and then put you out so I could do your shit. Right? I'm a person who would steal from you, argue with you, fight you, and curse you out. Swear to God I didn't take it. And can't wait for you to go so I can go sell it. Whatever it was. I'm talking about an addict. Any means necessary. We get down like that when I use. A speedball sound good. If anybody know what a speedball is. A speedball look real good. Like, it didn't matter. The drug of choice was more. Yours, his, hers. It didn't matter. I was just going to do the next one. I come into this program called Narcotics Anonymous, and I get some hope. And I didn't get that hope until I became a cellmate. November 15, 1990. Let's make it real clear. They said, remember your last day so you don't have to repeat it. Now, prior to coming up here this morning, I didn't have a clue about what I was going to share about, and a lot of times I read some stuff in the literature, but I'm not the person that bring the literature and quote verbatim. However, I live the literature. I am the literature. When you see me walking, I walk the literature. This is not about just talking the talk. This is about living it. And so I'm one of those people. So for me, on November 15th of 1990, when that cop was trying to arrest me because I was out of control, because I got beat for my last $10, it probably wasn't even my last $10. Let's get it right, right? Come on. It was her $10, right? The person I was sleeping with, it was her $10, and I was running around acting like it was mine. I got beat for the $10. The person came back and said, you know, I got beat. And I was like, this bitch lost her mind. Like, I know you ain't get beat. Not with my, maybe they beat you for yours, but listen. My friend tried to calm me down. I tried to go lay down. The person went and used probably my money up hers and did the thing and came back outside and was outside my window talking about it. You know, I couldn't compose myself. You know, the addict thing is you laying in bed and you trying to go to sleep and you can't sleep. Everything inside of you want one more. And I'm laying with a person who just could go to sleep. That's what the fuck. She already sleep. I'm rocking and rolling. I'm like trying to get to sleep. God, please help me get to sleep. Couldn't get to sleep. You hear this person outside talking about how they beat me for the last 10 hours. You know, I went outside to handle my business. I tried to address that. I went outside. She's talking. You know, we were doing this little arguing thing. And my friend came outside and was like, come on in the house. Tomorrow I'm going to get money. Blah, 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 blah. And when I went to turn around, I got sucker punched. Needless to say, I was bleeding profusely. And I lost my monkey ass mind. I have never been punched in the face before. And so I was ballistic. First, I ain't got no dope. I don't know which one made me madder. I ain't got no dope. I ain't got no money. And I'm punched in the face. Oh, hell no. It's on. So I'm running around and I'm trying to get this person for hitting me, beating me, all that. Well, needless to say, someone calls a cop comes, and I am like probably like 98 pounds soaking wet. I'm like a buck 30 now. So, you know, I was like sucked up. And I'm jumping from chair to chair. I'm jumping from car to car because I got to get this person. You don't understand. This is about image. This is about ego. This is about pride. This is about a whole lot of stuff. And this is about one more. Because by the time I catch her, I'm going to shake her down. And if she got something that's good to sell, we going to sell it. So we out of our mind. We running. We out of control. A cop comes and he says, like, he finally catches me and he goes, if you don't calm down, we're going to have to lock you up. You know, I got a moment of clarity. I didn't know that then, but I know it now. I got a moment of clarity and I said, oh, okay. Step one, surrender. So he walks me in my house and he says, like, it's going to be all right, but you need to calm down. But on my way in the house is this big china cabinet with a mirror. And I'm walking past it, and all I can see is all this blood on my face, and I'm a mess. And I lose my mind once again, and I bang the thing, and I run back out there to try to get her. And when he catches me, he said, you got to go. So needless to say, November 15th of 1990 was the last day I used. I got the message. When they put me in that jail cell, and that thing went clink, clink. Listen, I happen to be a gay woman, and that could be like a picnic area for some of us. But that is not where I wanted to be looking for a goddamn date. Right? I was like, oh, hell no. I didn't come up here to play games. I'm straight. I got somebody at home. Listen, when I went in there, right? The word cell, right? It implies, well, actually, Webster said, the word cell, mate. Cell is a small room for a prisoner, a small compartment or a reciprocal or a cavity. Now, a receptacle is anything that serves to contain or hold something. The piece about the cavity got me, a hollow or sunken space, a hole. And I'm going to get to that on a feelings level, but I want to share with you about the cell piece. When I was in that little cell, it was so small. And I'm a jokester, so I have fun with it. Like, I knew I was going to be there for a short period of time, and it was, like, fun, and I just made some jokes and, you know, made a couple of friends, and, you know, I was out. But for the people that were staying there, they were so comfortable in it, it scared the shit out of me. It felt like home for them. But as my process continued, because when I got out, the mission continued, I used again. I was in one of those places again. I did a six-month thing again. And so, like, I understand how it is to be conditioned and feel comfortable in an environment that you thought you would never be comfortable in. I became the jokester. You know, the COs loved me. They were sneaking me in sandwiches. Like, you know, I just made myself at home, and we just laughed. And the girl that slept in the bed next to me, she woke up in the middle of the night one day. She was like, I smell onions. I was like, bitch, if you don't go to sleep, ain't no onions in here. You must be dreaming. Well, I had a big-ass hoagie. I had a big old sandwich. I said, you better go back to sleep. Ain't nothing happening. Because I had been who I've always been, which is a chameleon. I adapted to my environment. And as a result of adapting to my environment, they just looked out for me. And so when I was in that cell, I mean, I really began to understand, like, I was in trouble. I was in trouble on a spiritual level, a physical level, emotional level, although I couldn't put these words to those feelings at that time. But I knew I wanted to do something different. I began to ask God, who had only been asking God, like, please let the dope man be home. Please let the check come. Please let my mother give me 20. Please let my uncle go to sleep so I can take whatever. You know, I was asking God for some stuff, so we had a relationship already. Yeah. Please don't let me get beat. You know, all this kind of stuff. And so when I came in, y'all was talking about God, it was no big deal. I just had to transition to a higher level. A healthier level of communication with the God of my understanding. So when I got to this place where I'm getting old, I lost my train of thought. He said, welcome to the club. Jeez. Y'all hungry. Y'all talking about the hoagie. That was 5 minutes ago. I ain't messing with y'all. I'm going to try to pick up from where I think I was. In any event, the whole cellmate experience had brought me to a place of surrender. That's my piece. And the piece is that when I got there, I knew I wanted something different. And the thing that I began to ask for was, God, help me. I didn't understand the help I was asking for. I didn't understand Narcotics Anonymous was on the way. I didn't understand what the prayer was even about. All I knew is that I was in pain and didn't want to do it no more, and I didn't want to live like that no more. So when I went before the judge, I said to the judge, like, please, I don't want to go back where I just came from. Help me. The judge sent me to a little program. I got it together. Life got good. What I didn't know is that I sat in that recovery place, because he sent me to a program. I went to that recovery place, and I sat up front, and I listened, and I participated, and I did everything they told me to do. And I thought I understood. And I thought I was working this program. And something happened. They tell you to stay away from people, places, and things. They mean that shit. For those who don't know what people, places, and things is, it could be a bar, it could be your mother, it could be your cousins, your brother, the playground, whatever. Anything that you copped or used that or made you feel uncomfortable that you thought about you wanted to use could be one of those locations. Well, I would go to this program all day, and they put me up in a hotel, and when I would come home from the program, I would be in my hotel, and, you know, an attic alone is in bad company, and I really wasn't into the literature because they had me reading some other book. And I didn't quite get it. I didn't even understand who John Barleycorn was, and I still don't know who this guy is, but that's the kind of shit they was talking about in the other book. And so I said, like, I'm going to the bar. I'm just going to go shoot pool and have a drink of soda. Now, it worked. I'm going to show you how the disease worked, because it worked for a couple of days. Like, I would go shoot pool, and then I started to, like, question what people was telling me in the program. Like, but you mean I can't go to the bar and shoot pool and have a Coca-Cola? I can. I did. And I did it again. And I did it again. And then I ran into somebody. And then I found a whole bunch of money. And then I did what I always do, which was try to make the money back. That's my story. Let's make the money back. Spend it and try to get paid. And I relapsed. And that was in 1988. And in 1990 is when I got this program. All of that did was prepare me for the total surrender. Because I clearly understood the language that is spoken around here makes sense to us, but it does not reach my heart just yet. It's in my head. And there's a length of space here. It takes time to get there. And so all the information I had gotten in 1988 began to measure up and I began to be able to put into fruition, bring it into existence by the time 1990 fell on me. I was tired. I had been in many, many relationships. Always had good people in my life. I pretty much was the problem in the relationship, for the most part. Total self-centeredness, me, and even though I really didn't think that that's how I was living. It's only through understanding the application of these steps and these traditions that I get to see the real me. And I'm not really happy on most days with who I was, who I can be, and who I am still sometimes, right? But because I understand who I am, I have an opportunity to change positions. I have an opportunity to shift directions. Because it is my ultimate goal to have a soulmate, to be with that person, to honor that person, respect that person, and like bond. Because when you're talking about a soulmate, you're talking about the moral or spiritual part of a human being that's related to God. And as a result of that, I've been in many relationships when I'm the only one that's praying. How can I be in a relationship that I call somebody my soulmate when they don't even got a God in their life? I'm not talking about the superficial God. I'm not talking about the God that they want, the house, the yacht, the sneakers. I ain't talking about that God. I'm talking about the go-to God when all shit is breaking loose, when things are going good, when you just need to talk. They tell you in the literature, like, sometimes y'all ain't going to be available. You know y'all got these cell phones, beepers, pages, whatever. Look, a lot of times you don't answer. So like, who I'm going to call? I better have a relationship with a higher power. The step process is in order for a reason. And the first step is about surrender. The second step is about getting some understanding and getting some, faith. The third step, you begin to really try to understand, who are you giving this stuff to? They be telling you a lot around here, turn it over. Well, turn it over to who? Turn it over to what? Everybody be so willing to move on in the step process, but you cannot play with the second and third step. Right. It ain't nothing nice about it. You're talking about a restoration process in the second step. You're talking about some insanity. You have to acknowledge how insane you was, right? And how insane I am still. Clean, 15 years clean in the process, my thinking is still offbeat a lot of days. I'll give you a perfect example. Right here, right now, in Ocean City. Going to a hotel. Don't like my room. Joe B, on your programming committee, tells me that me and my partner over here has breaking a record in your area for being in 3 hotels in a 24-hour period. And check it out. I'm okay with that. And the reason why I'm okay with that is because just for the day, I can ask for what I pay for, what I want, and what I deserve. So I requested some things prior to coming here, and they put me in the back in a booth in a corner in the dark somewhere, and I said, oh, hell no. I asked to be on the water. I'm looking to wake up to the sun or go to sleep to something. The insanity is I had a fixed idea about what I was going to get when I got here. An expectation. Locked and loaded. And until I got it, all bets was off. I entertained the thought. I said to the guy, he said to me, well, we don't have anything right now. Someone made a mistake. I can't really fix it right now. I said to him, look, I'm about negotiation. You know, I got some tools, I got some skills, and I got some principles. So I said to him, listen. I said, how about I go to dinner and I come back and we see if we can find a solution to my dilemma. And he said, yeah, we can do that. But the insanity was, I knew that I didn't want to be there. And I couldn't just say to him, could you just give me my money back, charge my money back on my card, I got to go. I didn't do that. I did the whole process because I said it to him, and I now need to follow through. So I go to dinner. Well, I didn't even go to dinner, but we came over here, and we hung out, and I called him, like, before 7 o'clock, like I said, and he said, we can accommodate you. We have a room on the first floor, and we have a view by the ocean. He lied. I went all the way over there. I said, before we move my stuff, can you give me the key to the other room so I can look? We were still around the corner, way near the ice machine. He's talking about it's a side view. We saw parked cars. Listen, at that moment, if restoration was going to happen, I needed to invite God in, because now I'm tired. And I'm running around here like a crackhead trying to find my friends in this big-ass convention so I can get a bed somewhere, anywhere. I'm willing to sleep with my friend. I look, call your wife, tell her I'm sleeping with you because I need a spot. Look, when I was using, I don't remember. I may have, but I don't remember being in a hotel that was smoky as that one. I said, oh, hell no. You moved me to a worse room? I said, listen. I went back to the guy. I said, listen, I really need to thank you for trying to accommodate me, but I'm all set. Here's your keys for the first room. Here's your keys for the second room. Here we go. Well, what are you asking me? Well, I am asking you to put my money on my car because I never slept in your room. And the only thing that you got to do to get your room back in order is to take the tissue or the banana out the garbage that I threw in there while I was in there. So we talked, and he said, okay. And he put the money back on the card. And a blessing is my friend who lives here and is on program and was kind enough to share his space with me and my friend. And we're right across the street. Now we can walk over when we need to. God is good, because I asked God to help me not act out of pocket, not be a character, present myself with character. And as a result, we got some resolution. But addicts that were around me got the venting. I was mad. They heard me. But when it's time to be appropriate, I was appropriate. And that's the key, trying to be restored. And the third step, I asked God to come in and help me with that. And he did. And my understanding of God, right, so I can get to the soulmate piece, is that when I began to relate to God, I understood that I needed to have a God that I really believed and understood and trusted. And it was defined for me in my first or second year of recovery as, if I didn't really understand, like, who I was going to turn my stuff over to, I probably wasn't going to leave it there. It's almost like asking somebody to watch your child. You develop a relationship with them. You watch them for a while. You get some understanding. There's a process that goes along with that. My relationship with my Creator, I have a clear understanding of who I'm praying to each and every day, in between the days. I'm all set with that. So if you don't have an understanding of who you're giving this stuff to, you are stuck right there. Because when the storms come, when the fourth and fifth step happen, sponsor ain't going to be all that you need. Sponsor ain't going to be in the bed with you at night. I'm right now in the middle of a fourth step for the eighth time. This is my eighth process. And I'm telling you something, right? More is being revealed. I'm writing on the relationship piece. And the patterns that are revealed to me, I don't want to repeat. She said 5 minutes. Let me try to wrap it up. I don't want to repeat the patterns. So I have been at a place where I was married in May of 1997 to a beautiful woman. And love her dearly. Now, I've always felt like she was my soulmate. We did like a fifth step. We know everything about each other. Well, we think we told everything each other that we needed to. And who you slept with, all these people in the meetings, all that shit. Just so when I'm sitting in the meeting and I'm hugging y'all, shit, I know y'all knocked them boots, all that. I know that. And I still can love you unconditionally because that shit happened before me. Right? That ain't my business. Right? So, like, I understand, like, it was important for me to do that kind of work. Because if I'm really going to be attached to you in a way that a soulmate should be attached to you, I really need to accept you for who you are. And I need the same thing from you. That takes a lot of goddamn work. But God must be present first and foremost in order for it to be a reality. My partner at the time woke up one day and said, like, I don't want to live here no more in Rhode Island, and I want to move to the ATL. And we had talked about buying a house and living out south where it's warm and stuff like that, and I wasn't ready. I wasn't ready to go. The disease of addiction is wreaking havoc in my niece's life, and as a result, I'm now responsible for a 16-year-old, an 11-year-old, and a 7-year-old. And I told her, I can't go. They've been in schools since they're in the kindergarten. He got 2 more years in this school. This one's in St. Andrews, a really good school. Like, you know, we got stuff going on. You just pack up and go because you feeling some stuff and you want. Look, this ain't just about you. My relationship with God in the 11th step tells me, with or without a mate, with or without a partner, it's going to be all right. With or without money. I've been without a job since June, and I don't have no money, right? And they know, my friends know, I'm broke this weekend. Can you buy me this? I ain't got no problem with asking for what I need, right? Because I'm a giver, and I don't have a problem with asking so I can receive. And so when I'm in that place of understanding that God has set forth for me this new relationship, what I thought, because when she moved to Atlanta, because I accepted where she was at, acknowledged what she needed to do for her, and respected that and supported her in her journey. And I love her dearly and still is in love with her, right? But I can love you unconditionally because the 11th step gives me a foundation that can no man or woman take from me. I'm all set with y'all, right? The human being and the physical stuff. My spirit is intact and it's all good. So now she's gone. I pray to the higher power for somebody I could connect with. You know, like to hang out in Borders Bookstore, read books, go for a walk in the park, like to cuddle. Well, God gives me that. And I'm thinking, damn, could this be my soulmate? When I had just thought the 9 years, 11 years, whatever it was with this one, you know, I thought that was the soulmate. So I tried this relationship, and I found out that I'm still connected spiritually, emotionally, physically, even though there's so much space in between me and the person that's in Atlanta, that like just maybe this is the one. And the process I'm in right now is giving myself a break and other people because I'm not making no major decisions on a relationship tip until I complete this thorough 5th step with my sponsor in May on relationships. Because I need to understand who shows up in those relationships. I'm tired of doing the same thing. So I want something different. So through this process of the relationship, through this process of the step work, I'm trying to figure out, is that my soulmate? Do I just need to be alone? God, what is your design for me? And I'm really okay with whatever the decision is. I really am in surrender mode. I'm going in May to visit her, to talk some stuff through, maybe jump around, you know. Yeah, I'm getting a little backed up, you know what I'm saying? We're going to do the, no, I'm going to clarify that. We're going to do the damn thing. Yeah, we're going to. And after we do all that and pray a little, you know, hopefully God will show up in our lives and direct us because I need to ask God for direction, and then I need to sit still long enough to hear the answer, right? Because it's important that I acknowledge the truth, and the truth is I want to make love to her, and I'm going to make love to her, and I ain't in denial about that shit. But the person I left back home, who I just got out of a relationship, I think she's the most beautiful person, spiritual person, healthy person, and sometimes I think I'm picking the wrong person in the ATL because she's still self-centered sometimes and still absorbed. And you know, so I'm really trying to ask God, please help me with this one because I feel like I let go the prize to reach back to the familiar, and I ain't real fucking sure. So right now I'm in chaos and confusion, and thank God for a 5th step and a sponsor and a loving and caring God. Thanks for letting me share.